Isaiah 58, and I'm just going to point out various verses as we go through. Four main points in case I have to stop before the 5 minutes. Beyond yourself to the big picture is the first task of mothering, parenting that we see reflected here. Second, create a safe and fair environment. Third, discover the fulfillment of responding to needs. And fourth is positive healing words. So those are the four main points. Beyond yourself to the big picture, we see this in the situation back then. God says in verse 1, declare to my people their rebellion. They seem eager to know my ways. In verse 2, they seem eager for God to come near them. It's kind of on the surface, though. Verse 3, you do as you please. And down especially in verse 13, if you keep from doing as you please on my holy day, if you honor it by not going your own way and not doing as you please, and then 14, then you'll find your joy in the Lord. So a lot of it is kind of refocusing from just our own selfish desires. Children can be just adorable until they hit the terrible twos. Sometimes they start to express their fallen selfishness, especially if they're strong-willed. Parents' task is helping them think of others, think outside themselves, start to share, and you don't always have to be the first one. We model this by our own devotional life, because we're pointing to the child. The parents are God in that kind of system in a way, but we don't lord it over them. We need to model submission to God outside ourselves as parents. For example, our devotional life, including God routinely in our home life, scripture reading, just doesn't have to be long, but just and praying, saying grace at meals, those sorts of things. And my strong impressions from my mom is recalling her, seeing her kneeling beside the bed each night. My dad had arthritis in his knee, so it was hard for him to kneel, but I have this picture. Often you'd kind of pass the parents' bedroom or be going to the bathroom or that, and you'd see mom would be in praying beside her bed before she went to sleep. Next point, create a safe and fair environment. We see this in verse 3. They were exploiting all their workers, striking each other with wicked fists. And then God asks us in verse 6, this is the kind of fasting that I really want, to loose the chains of injustice, set the oppressed free. Verse 9, do away with the yoke of oppression. Verse 10, satisfy the needs of the oppressed. So, to create a safe and fair environment. Part of a parent's task is to arbitrate disputes. For example, if you've got two kids, they both want the same toy. Kind of one symbol of this in our home was the little kitchen timer. We wore that kitchen timer out because you'd say, okay, 15 minutes for Johnny and then Janie, or whatever way. Anyway, you have to have some way of arbitrating disputes and making it fair so that everybody gets a turn. You probably have your own ways in your own homes. I had two older brothers, but I look back and I kind of wonder how my parents did it, because it was a bully-free zone. Like, I had never really felt intimidated or picked on, at least not that I can recall. So making that safe environment in the home. Third point, discover the fulfillment of responding to needs. Verse 7. The kind of fasting God wants is to share your food with the hungry, provide the poor wanderer with shelter, when you see the naked to clothe them, not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Verse 10, and I'll emphasize this, is kind of the theme verse for today, if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry. I don't know if you're like me, you often called for mum in the middle of the night if you woke up and you're sick or you're scared. I don't recall calling for dad. It was usually mom that you called for. I don't know. Even today, the children across the road from us kind of model this responding to needs. They often come across with a plate of baking. It's something that they themselves have made. You know, Yvonne's condition is just kind of thoughtful that their parents are kind of helping them look outside themselves and respond to needs beyond the home. And last, positive healing words. Verse 4, your fasting ends in quarreling and strife. Verse 9, the pointing finger and malicious talk. 12, this is kind of what we will be aiming towards. People will rebuild the ancient ruins. You'll be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. And verse 13, not speaking idle words. So this is kind of very verbally focused. Instead of using words to attack others and tear them down, instead building them up, being restoring, repairing relationships. Not only intervene when kids are bickering, but to learn the power of encouraging, guiding, and affirming words. This isn't just when they're young, even when they're making decisions about careers and job searches and what courses they should take in college. It takes a fair amount of tact to kind of describe to them how you see them, or kind of how their gifts are, and also to kind of maybe let them know where their weak areas are too, or no, you're not strong in that area, but without it coming across as criticism or really deflating. So that takes some tact. And just want to end with an example of some positive healing words. Our Governor General, Michael Jean, was over in France, part of a celebration of Quebec City's 400th anniversary this past week. And the news reported these words from the French President Nicolas Sarkozy. He said he would like to bring together Quebec and Canada. You know, we are very close to Quebec, but I'll tell you, we also love Canada very much. The future of Canada and France will be the future of two countries that are not only allies, but two friends. And some of you, not all of you, but some of you will remember Charles de Gaulle in 1967 and his Vive le Québec libre and the FLQ crisis. And that was a very tense time in Canada. And it's kind of taken decades to heal, to kind of gradually recover from that. But these were very healing words. Sarkozy thanked Canadian soldiers for their sacrifice. And these last two sentences really got me. And those who died here, no one asked them from which region of Canada they came. We knew from which country they came. We didn't even ask them which language they spoke. That was very well said and healing words. So may the Lord bless this passage as we continue to meditate on it to our understanding and our application in our homes and in our life and community as well.
I'm awake this morning. Good morning. There we go. That's a little bit better. So every time, pretty much every week, you know, when we do our little message here, I print out my sermon notes, and every week, I'm pretty sure I put them where I know they'll be, and then they're not there. So I'm preaching off my computer today. I hope that's okay. As was mentioned, I'm going to lower this a bit. That's good. As was mentioned, our theme for this year is spend yourself. So I want you guys to tell me, what do you think of when you hear the word spend yourself? Just first impressions. Just pardon? Exhaustion? Spend yourself. Giving? Not holding back. Anybody else? Okay, that's cool. Those are good answers. Now, if you type the phrase spend yourself into Google on the internet, you find 2,800,000 results. So that's pretty good. But if you add the word on, so it says spend on yourself, you get 4,980,000 results. And that's not very surprising, is it? Here's a question for you. How many people here have ever bought themselves a birthday or a Christmas present? You're allowed to admit it. It's okay. Quite a few of us. A lot of people have, and there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. I'm not coming down on you, because I've done it too. So, but it's an interesting look at how our North American culture's view of things is. Whether we realize it or not, our North American culture here has become a very me-centered culture, and it becomes more and more that all the time. Many of us, you know, many people consider themselves very generous, and there's a lot of very generous people out there, very giving people. But a lot of the time you wonder, you know, you see these celebrities giving millions of dollars to charities and stuff like that, and you wonder, you know, are they really doing it just to help people, or, you know, is this going to be a career boost? You know, their last movie flopped, so maybe they want people to like them again or something. In most situations, you know, people, even if they're, if their intentions are good, there's this underlying, you know, what can I get out of this? Compare this North American idea of buying yourself a birthday or Christmas present to some cultures where when you have a birthday party, you buy all your guests a present and give it to them as they leave or come in. It's such a different outlook on everything. So as a team of youth builders, as a team of youth builders, each year the youth builders come up with a theme. We work together during the summer during our training, and we say, you know, what do we want to bring to churches? What do we feel passionate about? What do we think is important for the church to hear this year? And so this year, this summer, we sat down with the other team of youth builders and our leaders and sat down for hours and hours and kind of talked through different verses we'd been reading, different ideas that have been going through our heads. And there's a couple ideas that kind of stuck out to us. Firstly was this idea of, you know, consumerism, this consume, me of North America. And that was just made even bigger for us when we went to Ghana in Africa, just seeing the difference in culture there. Also the idea of community. Something Youth Builders is very much about is learning to live in community with other people, because, you know, the four of us spend more time together than most married couples. So learning to live in community is a very, you know, us instead of me idea. And as we were going through these ideas, we found ourselves in the book of Isaiah, chapter 58. And I'm going to read through that whole chapter in just a minute. But at first glance, you know, the opening verses don't really seem to have anything to do with consumerism or community. Not a lot. I mean, a little bit. But it's like, you know, they're talking about trumpets and punching people and different things like that. But as we got into it, we read through the entire passage. We're like, wow, this is like exactly what we're talking about. And then we went to Ghana, as I mentioned, and we were a part of a youth development camp. We were there with an organization called International Needs, and they did their first ever youth camp. And so we were a part of that, helping to lead some small group discussion. And we were in the book of John talking about true freedom in Christ. And as we're kind of going through this, we're like, hey, this kind of ties into to Isaiah 58. That's pretty cool. So this morning we just want to share a little bit with you about what we've been learning this year, what we've been sharing with churches this year, and what's been on our hearts. So I'm going to read Isaiah 58 first off. I think I'll just read it off here. Just push forward and back. Is it pretty? Okay. That seems easy enough. So Isaiah 50... I don't want to stand in front of it. So Isaiah 58, verses 1 to 12. Shout it aloud. Do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their rebellion and to the house of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask me for just decisions and seem eager for God to come near them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed? Yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for man to humble himself? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying on sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke? To set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry, and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called a repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings.
So I'm going to unpack this verse a little bit for us. So in this passage, there's a prophet called Isaiah who is talking to the people of Israel and basically telling them they're being a bunch of hypocrites. They're saying, I want to follow God. I want to do what's right. I want to go and do what God says. And then they say and do the opposite. So that's what he's basically saying in the first few verses. And then at verse 6, he starts listing off things that they should be doing instead. So starting off, he says, loose the chains of injustice, untie the cords of the yoke. Basically, freeing people from bondage. And I believe this is more than just freeing people from physical bondage or just setting people free who are captive or in slavery. I believe it means forgiving someone even though they don't ask for it, freeing them from their emotional bondage, and even if they don't ask, because it's also freeing yourself from that. Then it goes on to say, share your food with the hungry. The part in this verse that really stuck out to me was sharing. It didn't say, give what you have extra. It says, share. Give what is normally yours. And that really struck me a lot. And a few months ago, I heard a story from a conference we went to. And there was two guys who decided they'd be homeless for 6 months on the streets to just figure out how homeless really is so they can work with homeless people. And one day they were going and they had no food. They'd been working all day trying to find a way to get food for the day. And they couldn't. And they ran into a guy who was also homeless and he had a loaf of bread. He broke it, gave it to him. And the guy's first reaction was, shouldn't you save this for tomorrow? You should save what you have extra and keep it for tomorrow so you have food tomorrow. And he goes, I have food now. You don't. And I thought that was a really cool story. So it goes on and says, invite the poor wanderer into your home. So have you ever had a house guest? And you invite them over, you give them the best bed you can have, make sure they're well provided for, even stay up late talking with them if they want to talk to the wee hours of the morning. And you make sure they're completely comfortable because they're your guest. And you don't want them to go hungry or be dissatisfied with anything. So I think about that passage and that particular part, and I think poor wanderer into your home isn't more than just giving them a bed. It's providing for them. It's giving to them. It's making sure they're well provided for and cared for. And I've noticed in this passage, it says over and over and over how it's talking about physical and emotional and spiritual needs of people. It's not just saying give them what they need, as in food or clothing or stuff like that. I think it's also saying give what they need as in emotional support and physical support and spiritual support. I have a personal story to go along with this again. For many years, I was a junior youth sponsor at my church. And I was in charge of a grade 7 group. My first year, I was in charge of a grade 7 group of girls. And it was funny because it's my first day, and me and my best friend are leading this small group of grade seven girls, and we walk into the group the first time, and they wouldn't listen to us. They were back talking us. They would ignore us. They'd go into their little collector in the other end of the room and completely ignore us. And I walked out of that small group that night wanting to quit. I didn't want to go back the next week. They're not listening to me. They probably never will. I was going through all this thing, I did not want to go back. I was so discouraged. I didn't want to. And God kind of said, you have to go back. You bought into this. You're going back. And somehow, by the end of the year, no clue how, these girls were talking to us about their problems in school, sharing with each other, sharing with us, and really caring about us. And even went to the point that next year we were their small group leaders. And now they're leading small groups. They're leaders. They're in grade 10 now, and they're the ones being the small group leaders. And I keep thinking to myself, would they be in the same boat if I didn't go back that next week? How would they feel if I didn't show up that next week? Because I couldn't do it. Because I wanted to follow my own selfish desires of staying behind, and because I felt discouraged. The biggest problem with doing what this passage says is that we can't get over of what we want. It's hard to fight our own desires and be able to fight what we want in this world. But there is a way, and we can't do it our own.
Sometimes in our own lives, we cannot be set free from our own desires without the help of Jesus. We can get so caught up in what we want that we lose focus of what it is that God really wants for us. We can become trapped in earthly desires, and at times it may feel as though that there is no escape, but there is, and all we need to do is ask. When earthly things become more important than Jesus, it is not always easy to see. There are many people who strive to live a successful life. They may work very, very hard to have a well-paying job. They may work hard to have a nice home that they are comfortable in, and a point in their lives when they feel that all of their needs are being met. But what is missing in this? Jesus is. So without him, can we really have true success? The feeling of never being satisfied with what we have, or always wanting more. But what is the more that we're looking for? It could be more clothes, more money, more material things, more things that we think will make us happy. But if that's what we think will make us happy, our happiness level may never be reached, because Jesus is missing in that. How will we ever experience true freedom in our own lives if we don't even realize that it is missing? Rather than just wanting more of something else, there is also wanting more from someone else. Being jealous of the things that others have and feeling like it should be yours. When you look at other people's lives, maybe you see the success that you truly wish you had, or maybe you see happiness that you wish you could have inside of you. Looking at what others have will not get us closer to what Jesus wants for us. No one else can show us what true freedom is except for God. When we were in Ghana, we went there with international needs, and it was the first time that I believed that I was able to experience what true freedom really is, or be able to witness that. We stayed in a guest house in a village called Adedome, and right beside there was a training center for women. And they were called Trokosi women, which means bride of the gods. And basically, in some of the African village, they have what is called a fetish priest. And if there's a family in the village that needs to pay back a debt, or they have committed a sin, the fetish priest will take basically a young virgin from the family, and she will become his slave for the rest of her life if she's not freed. And she'll have to do whatever she wants, whether it's for sex or for work, and basically she grows up, and that's all she knows. International needs will send someone in to educate the village and also negotiate with the fetish priest to set these slaves free. And if he says yes, then they will go to this training center where for 2 years they'll get counseling and they'll learn a trade, and they'll make a lot of new friends and I guess basically get their lives back on track. And for me, when I was there, I mean, there was girls as young as I am, and I'm only 18, and some of them had, you know, maybe one or two kids, or I just could not imagine that everything that they had already gone through in their lives, and to see, like, their smiles on their faces, it was like, it was unbelievable, because they had this excitement about them that I've never seen before in anyone else, and I just could not believe after all they had gone through that they could still be smiling like that. So for me, I was really able to experience that, you know, God had set them free from the slavery that they had been in, and now that they were living true freedom in their own lives. And to me, it was just amazing. So then in our own lives, it sometimes may take a second to take a step back and look to see what it is that we need to let go, that we need to give up to God. And Jesus can help us be free. Once we realize what is trapping us, asking God to help us break us free from these desires can start us on a path to freedom. He wants to help, and we just need to go to him, willing to let go of the things that are holding us back. So in your own life, are you willing to let go of those things and let Jesus help you experience true freedom. Thank you.
Good. So I kind of get excited about this idea of freedom. I found one verse that kind of speaks directly to this. It's in Galatians 5. So I'll just read that. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Four paragraphs after that, it says pretty much the same thing, but goes a little bit further. You, my brothers, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the sinful nature. Rather, serve one another in love. The entire law is summed up in a single command: love your neighbor as yourself. If you keep on biting and devouring each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. So, for me, I guess I've seen this in different ways. It's about that whole struggle between myself and what God wants me to do. At one point, it was probably pretty simple. You know, my parents would lay out basically the law, and it's like, this is what's good to do, this is what bad's to do. If you do good things happen. If you do bad things happen. Follow the rules, it makes sense. But in my own faith life, things have gotten a lot more complicated than that, where I guess there's a lot more gray areas, and I can try to make the right choice and I can fail, or I can think I'm making the right choice and be making the very wrong choice. It's just very confusing for me. So, I guess, when I was in grade 11, I'd gotten really involved in my youth group at my church. And it was a big youth group. There was always lots of stuff to do, lots of ways to help out. And I thought I was doing the right thing. I was reading all the right books so I could have all the right answers. I was doing all sorts of things. My schedule was booked with church activities, you know. I was doing the right stuff. But for some reason, I still didn't see that God was active in my life. I didn't see that. I guess I just didn't see him at all. You know, I was just working. So this was a problem. I eventually got really frustrated and decided that, you know, I didn't see myself making an impact in my high school, and I really didn't enjoy high school anyways. So I thought I'd drop out and just work for a while, make some money, I'd be able to support missions, maybe do some more of my own. And, you know, there'd be more things that I could do. And I'd just be more useful that way. I talked to my youth pastor about it, and he told me that that was a really stupid idea. In hindsight, you know, it very well could have been. It seemed like a good idea to me at the time. He basically said that my high school needed me. I thought that was pretty stupid. If my high school needed me so badly, then why wasn't it using me? It just didn't make much sense to me. But I set my ego aside, and I thought, well, okay, what are the reasons I'm actually going to high school? In reality, I was going to high school to get educated so I could get a job, so I could make money. Pretty simple. I wasn't going there to impact people. I thought it would be a good thing. I thought it would be nice if that kind of happened, you know, on the side. But that wasn't my first priority. So, again, I set my ego aside and said, okay, I'll go back to high school. And I won't just go back for my last year of high school. I'll go back for 2 years. I'll take my time. I'll have more time to, I guess, hang out with people. I won't be chasing the world's idea of success. I'll just see what happens if I leave more space for relationships. It was a huge sacrifice for me. I hated high school so much. I can't even describe it to you properly with words. It was just really frustrating to me, but I decided to go for it, to just set 2 years aside. And it didn't happen immediately. I did other things, like I started reading my Bible, I guess, every night. I just read a chapter, you know. Thought it was a good place to start. Started in Matthew, you know, started with Jesus. Also a good place to start. That was my grand scheme of things. And, you know, that's all I did. I just left God some space and read my Bible a little more regularly. Well, quite regularly. It was on a schedule. But God used it. God used all kinds of things. I had a friend who I'd met in grade 9 when I wasn't even following Jesus. and she became a Christian. And it wasn't through me saying the right things to her at all. It was just because I was there to be her friend, and she got connected to some other people and some things that really inspired her and helped her to see, I guess you could call it, God's kingdom. And she was, you know, she loved that. So, you know, she hopped on board. It wasn't me. It was just something that happened because I was there. I had another friend who, I guess because he found out I was going, like I had a spare because I was taking more time with my, I had 2 years of school, so I had some spares. And I was spending the spare with this old friend of mine from public school, and I was going on a missions trip to Mexico. It was just like a 2-week thing. And he heard about it, was interested, asked questions, came to the youth group because, you know, I guess he was interested in the idea of a missions trip, got on the missions trip. His parents started helping with the fundraising for the missions trip, got connected with the church. His whole family comes to church now, and he's on the road to ministry himself. And it might not have happened if I hadn't been there. But it wasn't because of me. Which is pretty exciting, because what I started to realize, like I had been doing teaching at my youth and stuff, but what I started to realize with all of these, I guess, responsibilities I had stuck on myself, all I was really doing was making myself available to be used by God. I had all this stress, I was trying to do things properly, but once it hit me really hard, I started listening and realizing all I have to do is be available. And sometimes being available would mean making sacrifices. And that's something Isaiah 58 talks about a lot. You know, the whole spend yourself idea. It means to basically pour out from your very being, even from your soul, when you look into the language. And it's a huge idea of sacrifice. But I found that I didn't care. Because it would be something, like it might be something simple. Like you teach me obedience in simple little ways. Like I just feel like maybe I should read another chapter tonight. And I'd read that extra chapter, and God would really speak to me. Or speak to somebody else through that the next day, you know? There was all kinds of stuff that would happen. And just little sacrifices that sometimes turned into bigger sacrifices. But the more I gave, the less I cared how much I had. It was amazing. I get really excited about, I guess it's verse 11 in Isaiah 58. It says, "The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail." It's basically a promise that if we're walking with God, He's going to take care of us. You know, I could make a little sacrifice on my own, decide to splurge on something and be like in debt the very next week because I made a bad decision. But if I'm just doing the little things that God prompts me to do, He's going to take care of me. He satisfies my needs. Burnout isn't an issue if I'm only committing to the things that He's telling me to commit to. You know, if I'm just following God. Not that it won't be hard. Not that there won't be sacrifices. But that we will be taken care of. And Galatians 5 talks a bit more about this. "So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. For the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature. They are in conflict with each other, so that you do not do what you want. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under law." And then it goes through listing all sorts of sins and the fruits of the Spirit. And then continues on with, "Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the sinful nature with its passions and desires." So something of me died with Christ there, my own desires, and I don't, somehow He takes care of that for me. And then it says after that, "Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit." So I guess throughout all this, I'd like us to realize that to spend ourselves means to sacrifice from ourselves, firstly. To pour out what God has poured into us, to give this life away as we receive it from Jesus. But also that being guided by the Spirit is more important than all of the good decisions we can make. And that at the end of the day, I guess, we find our solace, our rest, our security in the fact that we've done good, done what God has us to do. Not the things that we need to do to make us feel good or secure. And the joy that I've experienced from that has been extreme. So I guess that last part, since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. That would be my prayer for you.